This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to this week's edition of Flashback Friday, your opportunity to get some good review by listening to episodes from the past that Jason has handpicked to help you today in the present and propel you into the future. Enjoy.
Welcome to the Holistic Survival Show with Jason Hartman. The economic storm brewing around the world is set to spill into all aspects of our lives. Are you prepared? Where are you going to turn for the critical life skills necessary to survive and prosper? The Holistic Survival Show is your family's insurance for a better life. Jason will teach you to think independently, to understand threats, and how to create the ultimate action plan. Sudden change or worst case scenario, you'll be ready. Welcome to Holistic Survival, your key resource for protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in uncertain times. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Jason Hartman.
Welcome to the Holistic Survival Show. This is your host, Jason Hartman, where we talk about protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in these uncertain times. We have a great interview for you today, and we will be back with that in less than 60 seconds on the Holistic Survival Show. And by the way, be sure to visit our website at holisticsurvival.com. You can subscribe to our blog, which is totally free, has loads of great information, and there's just a lot of good content for you on the site. So make sure you take advantage of that at holisticsurvival.com. We'll be right back.
Now you can get Jason's Creating Wealth in Today's Economy home study course. All the knowledge and education revealed in a 9-hour day of the Creating Wealth Bootcamp, created in a home study course for you to dive into at your convenience. For more details, go to jasonhartman.com.
My pleasure to welcome Dr. Jerome Corsi to the show. I've been a follower of his for many years, and I'm a big fan of his work. He's got 5 New York Times best-selling books and a huge body of work, and we'll delve into some of that today, as well as a couple of new works coming out that are very, very interesting. Jerry, welcome. How are you?
I'm great, Jason. Good to join you. Thank you.
Well, the pleasure is all mine. So maybe we'll start off with your work about oil that you have coming out. Is it The Oil Conspiracy?
Right, it's called the Great Oil Conspiracy. It's out now in a ebook version, and it will be out in September in a hardcover version in the stores. And I've written about this before. It's about abiotic oil. It's about the theory that oil is a naturally made product of the earth. Earth is still making it on an ongoing basis. Abiotic means not caused by or created by biological forces. In other words, I'm saying oil has nothing to do with fossil fuel. It's not a fossil fuel. It's not a biological product. It's a synthetic process that the earth creates naturally in the mantle of the earth. And our geologists have just been wrong about it. Everybody's been taught nonsense on oil in the United States. Around the world, the abiotic theory is much more accepted.
Well, I've read about the abiotic theory before, and you know, when I first heard of it many years ago, I looked it up in Wikipedia and such, and I guess if it is true, it would really blow a huge hole in the peak oil camp. However, even if it is true, and the Earth does make oil that way, which would be fantastic, the question then becomes, does it make oil fast enough, and can we get to it fast enough to meet our consumption needs?
Well, I think the point of the abiotic oil theory is that oil is abundant at deep levels within the earth. Now, I've been predicting for years that what we're seeing now would happen, that there'd be offshore oil found. Also, there'd be many processes to make, for instance, a shale oil that's being developed, tar sands in Canada. All of these are processes which are synthetic and natural processes. And if you think about it, you know, the fact is we've only looked for oil on the continental shelf. There's no reason there shouldn't also be oil deep under the ocean. And 70% of the Earth's surface is under water. So at deep levels, you're going to be finding oil in just huge quantities. It doesn't mean it's unlimited, and it doesn't mean it's made so fast that it's instantly replenished, but there's just so much oil, as opposed to the idea the fossil fuel. There are only so many fossils, there could only be so much oil. Instead of a limiting concept, there's so much oil that I can't imagine that we'll ever expend all the oil there is. It's just inconceivable to me.
Sure. And the other thing is, though, this shortage seems to be, even with current understanding and technology, even if one doesn't buy into the abiotic theory, if we could drill in the Gulf, in Anwar, if we could have the Keystone Pipeline, but the Obama group and the other, I call them green weenies, you know, they keep blocking every move. And it seems like they're in cahoots with to keep prices propped up.
Most of the restrictions on the development of oil are political. That's correct. And you can see, one of the things I point out in the great oil conspiracy is you're going to be surprised to find the United States is becoming one of the leaders in oil production, where we should be. We were told we were running out of oil, that we'd expended all of our oil, was gone. Well, it's not true. We're even today becoming a world leader in oil production, and by something like around 2035, 2025, the United States will be completely independent of foreign oil. There's no reason we should have foreign oil being used at all. And these are going to be startling ideas to Americans who have been conditioned to believe that the use of oil is harmful, that it's limited, we're going to run out, it comes from dinosaurs. You know, where are the dinosaurs 10 miles under the Gulf of Mexico?
Good question.
Right. And it's not the case at all. The dinosaurs at the end of the Mesozoic era herded to Saudi Arabia. It died in a big heap. It's not why we've got oil in Saudi Arabia. If you take a look at the book, I show that the fractures in the mantle of the earth under the Saudi Arabian oil fields are responsible for the oil seeping up in Saudi Arabia from the mantle of the earth and pooling in sedimentary rock. And the conspiracy part of the book is that the Nazis really had developed the formulas, the Fischer-Tropsch formulas, which they were using only to produce synthetic oil from coal. But the Nazis knew, and we've suppressed the information, that those formulas explain how oil is naturally created. And once you understand those formulas, it's compelling to look for oil at deeper levels, which we're doing now. I think the major oil companies have largely abandoned the idea that oil is fossil fuel. They just haven't bothered to tell the American people.
Yeah, right. Well, I guess it's not in their direct interest to do so, right?
No, but what is in the direct interest, I think, in the book makes a compelling argument, is to get out of the way of the oil companies. I mean, I think T. Boone Pickens is increasingly right. We've got abundant natural gas at cheap prices. If we let the oil companies produce the oil and natural gas they're capable of, we can have cheap energy and safe cheap energy. And these are the kinds of issues that I'm raising and compelling people to think about. And the Nazis knew this. I mean, if we have to go back to the formulas, I show how we even brought the Nazis to the United States. We had their knowledge. It's just that we used it in a very limited capacity to make oil from coal, and why bother making oil from coal? It's expensive when oil itself is abundant, as it was in the 50s and 60s. So the German knowledge got largely ignored, and I want people to go back to those formulas to understand that this is the basis in which the earth creates oil naturally and constantly.
Very, very interesting. This whole idea of scarcity, I read an interesting blog post on that, I can't remember where, about a year ago, Jerry, and it talked about how we've got to get out of our minds this scarcity issue with all our resources. I mean, and they compared it to the great progress makers of the past, like the Wright brothers, and said, do you think the Wright brothers were sitting there worrying about not doing this, about conserving that? They were moving forward. The whole idea of progress is to move forward and break new ground. And when you break new ground, you're going to change the dynamics to some extent. I just finished the book Abundance and had the author on my show last week, and the future in so many ways is so bright with technology, but there are forces that really want to keep things kind of the status quo, don't they? And limit supply and create artificial barriers. Like you said, the barrier to the oil shortage is basically a political phenomenon.
Well, you've had a Malthusian kind of bias that's gone on in human thinking, where it's current today in the environmental movement.
Oh, sure it is. You know, Malthus would be revered today.
Well, is revered.
Yeah,
today.
Is revered. Yeah.
Even though he was fundamentally wrong and the theory was disproven, but you see it over and over again. I mean, the Agency 21 agenda or the Agenda 21 of the United
the UN.
Nations.
Mm-hmm.
These are all just socialist ideas designed to herd people in the cities, control populations. I mean, if you look up to the environmentalists, they'd like to kill people. You know, they want to say 6 billion people, let's kill 4 of them. Of course, the environmentalists never include themselves in the ones that are going to be killed. It's like, you know, what is his name? Holton, who is, you know, science czar in the White House, has proposed all kinds of euthanasia and other outlandish kinds of thinking. And, you know, with Paul Ehrlich, he's been an author with Paul Ehrlich. And, you know, Holdren is, these are the kinds of people that we're allowing to form federal policy right now in the Obama administration. I'm much more of a fan of Julian Simon in terms of his understanding of resources. He was an economist, now deceased, very brilliant guy. And he would argue, for instance, that more population expands human capability. We have 6 billion people on the face of the earth. We could have many times that number of people. We could feed them. We could live comfortably and creatively. It's the politics that limit us. The Marxists, the socialists, the environmentalists, the Malthusians, the people who want to control economies and resources with government. Government's the worst thing. I mean, you get rid of government. Julian Simon does some brilliant analyses. He even looks at the Roman Empire and shows that, you know, as it had immigration and expansion of the population, creativity occurred within the Roman Empire. It's, you know, nations die when populations begin to be restricted. And right now, with population growth at zero or near zero in Europe and United States, I think we should be welcoming robust immigration into the United States, legal immigration, but we should be welcoming it, because an expansion of the creativity of the American people will occur with more people here and more talent to develop and utilize.
Well, you know, let me tell you, Jerry, I interviewed Peter Sale on my show, and he is the author of a book entitled Our Dying Planet. And I let him speak. It was about the most balanced conversation you'll ever hear on environmentalism, I think. I let him say everything, and, you know, we have too many people, and species are going extinct. And toward the end of the interview, I said to him, how do you know? I mean, in the late 60s or mid-60s, I believe I have a copy of the cover, of a Time magazine cover, that says the population is too large because we had, I think, 3 billion people. You know, who gets to decide what the right number is? And then when you decide on the right number, whether it's 7 billion or 3 billion or 45 billion, who gets to commit the genocide to get rid of the unwanteds, right?
Well, the planet will take care of its, you know, itself. There's natural population control, which occurs in natural processes. People decide to have fewer babies, different circumstances, etc. But government control of these kinds of issues is the worst possible thing. It leads to genocide. Eugenics movements always do. Always are Nazi-based. And look, the Earth is not dying. And in terms of species extinction, the Earth is undergone multiple, you know, 7-8 times, and virtually all the species on the face of the Earth were wiped out. There weren't any human beings around to be responsible for it. The Earth regenerated and came back. Well, we've had multiple instances where, you know, in terms of resources being depleted, the British were worried in the height of the Industrial Revolution, you know, that coal was going to be expended. We were running out of coal.
They were worried before that about whale blubber being scarce. You know, world could, you know, I remember an article, world to go dark, whale blubber scarce. You know,
right,
I mean,
well, there, it's conceivable that all the life on the planet could be extinguished. But if it happens, it'll be because of some kind of natural catastrophe that no one's contemplating. And that's probably be the case in, you know, the geological time. But the point is that human beings are minimally responsible for what goes on the planet. We should be good managers, but that does not mean Agenda 21. It doesn't mean environmental scares. Paul Ehrlich has been predicted, you know, just like Malthus originally, we're going to run out of this, we're going to run out of food, we're going to run out of this, that. You know, and their solutions are always killing people.
Ultimately,
well,
but they never say that. They never say that. They ultimately, that has to be the conclusion,
sure,
is that people have to go because people are the problem in their eyes.
Well, people are not the problem. People are the solution.
Well, I agree with you, but I'm saying in their eyes. That's what
in their eyes, of course. And you know, that's where you I think it's going to be a major awakening. The reason I wrote The Great Oil Conspiracy is for people to understand they've been lied to again by being told that oil is scarce and that it is a fossil fuel resulting from dinosaurs or plankton or some kind of biological material. Biological material does not deteriorate into oil. So we don't bury people. The Bible doesn't say dust into oil. It says dust into dust because we don't deteriorate into a higher form of energy. Living tissue deteriorates at death into constituent chemicals. And that's why we bury people, because that process is smelly, and the end result, you get a handful of ashes or a handful of chemicals, but you don't get any oil.
Let me ask you something. You know, and I want to talk about your work on the ACLU, the Bad Samaritan stuff and so forth, but just on this environmental movement issue, how did things get sort of turned around? Because if the ultimate goal of the environmentalist has to be, and I agree with you that it has to be, is to reduce the population, which is a eugenic, Nazi-esque type ideal. If that has to be the goal, how is it that the left, that the liberal left, picked up the environmental movement and not the conservatives that they portray to be so evil? I mean, now, of course, the Nazi Party is the National Socialist Party, yet very few people bother to remember that.
Jonah Goldberg wrote a brilliant book called Liberal Fascism, in which he pointed out that fascism is a liberal tendency.
Sure it is. And, of course it is.
And that, in fact, you know, the idea of government control, you know, no private property, all the Marxist ideas that the radical left today will not acknowledge they believe in, redistribution of income, expanding central government, these are ideas which inevitably cause depressions, lead to wars, divide populations, and they're usually combined with eugenics that leads to genocide, because the left would say, well, left is not interested in the First Amendment, the left is interested in thought control. And, you know, that's where you see it over and over again with these, you know, you can go to the Pol Pots, which end up killing thousands of people or millions of people. The revolution supposedly, you know, in Southeast Asia that were going to be so tremendously liberating for people, ended up killing millions of people. It always does.
It always does.
Yeah. The only thing you do in terms of, you know, our founding fathers were correct. That's why I wrote the book on the ACLU, is that, you know, the ACLU is another one of these leftist organizations dedicated to eliminating God. A book will be out again in this fall. It'll be called The Bad Samaritan. Because, look, it's hard for the left to say, we just have to let people go and be creative. We don't need to manage people. Sure, you have to have laws so people can't be criminal. But, you know, basically, you can have human initiative with private property for people to benefit themselves, let people go, and yes, there's going to be inequality. There's going to be some that do better than others, but the overall wealth that can be generated in this kind of formula gives the basis for helping those who do less well. The idea from the socialists, they want everybody equal, manage the use of environmental, you know, resources, etc., always end up destructive, because human intelligence, our creativity, our management is not sufficient to manage on that kind of a global scale. It's fine if we have individual enterprises and create businesses, but let bureaucrats decide how much wheat we should produce, and you'll be sure not to have any bread.
We'll be back in just a minute.
What's great about the shows you'll find on jasonhartman.com is that if you want to learn about investing in and managing income properties for college students, there's a show for that. If you want to learn how to get noticed online and in social media, there's a show for that. If you want to know how to save on life's largest expense, there's a show for that. And if you'd like to know about America's crime of the century, there's even a show for that. Yep, there's a show for just about anything. Only from jasonhartman.com. Or type in Jason Hartman in the iTunes store.
Talk to us more about the ACLU and what they're doing. I mean, of course, most of the time I disagree with the ACLU, but I'd say maybe 5, 10% of the time I kind of like them. You may disagree with me or whatever, but you know, I think some of the things they do are time-wasting and crazy and just clogging up the system, but there's a few things that, you know, I kind of agree with them.
Well, you know, I'm sure there's a few things that, you know, you can agree with anybody on. But the point is that what I do in the book, The Bad Samaritan, is go through the history and the origin of the ACLU to make it very clear that it was that the people who founded it were originally Marxists and communists. And the organization was founded in order to utilize principles of freedom in order to eliminate the type of freedom our founding fathers had in mind. So in other words, one of the principal arguments of the book is that the ACLU has waged a war on God to eliminate God from the public square. And in doing so, they've argued, well, it's because of religious freedom that they want to eliminate God. In other words, to preserve, so your religious freedom is not impinged by the state allowing the expression of belief in God in the public square to your dislike or detriment. And they've taken this idea from Jefferson of separation of church and state, which is not in the Constitution, and Jefferson never meant to be utilized to attack religion. It's an entire perversion of the idea of liberty that is typically argued by the ACLU to, in the name of advancing liberties, to restrict liberty. And the book is designed to get you to see through that public relations ruse that they use and to get down to the basic agenda of the ACLU, which is atheistic, except that they're happy with Muslims at the moment.
Right. Yeah, they only attack Christians and Jews probably, right?
Judeo-Christian. Yeah. They hate Judeo-Christian religion. It's atheistic, and its goal is to enforce a kind of socialism under the name of, again, civil rights. And in a key part of that has been to put forth a social agenda, sexual agenda, that is aimed at destroying the family. I mean, if you go back to the fundamental roots of Marx, and I named the ACLU founders who, you know, were involved with Marxism. It's no, you know, oh, it's a McCarthy-like attack. No, you know, a guy like William Z. Foster was writing books called, you know, Tour to Soviet America. These were openly proclaimed communists who founded the ACLU, who were members of the Communist Party. And the basic principles have remained in the organization, which is attack on God, an attack on the traditional family, and an attack on any of the economic liberties that would be fundamental to people in terms of advancing their own private enterprise. But the book focuses largely on the moral attacks and shows how at the base the ACLU is concurrently and continues to advance this atheistic sexual agenda, which is a value relativism. You know, anything goes.
Yeah, the moral relativism agenda, sure. But, you know, just out of, I mean, I get what they're doing. They're promoting secularism. They're promoting moral relativism. But what do they think is the net result of that? There will be just less community? I mean, certainly if you promote secularism, you destroy community because religious organizations are very communal.
Well, also, they don't want God expressed in the public arena. They're atheists. They think God is detrimental. Remember, I go through some of the cases that made the ACLU, the Scopes Monkey Trial, where they had a vicious attack on belief in God with the argument that scientific materialism established the theory of evolution. Now, again, there's been a continuing attempt since the Scopes Monkey Trial to argue that evolution is established science. I think evolution is largely nonsense, especially the way that Darwin proposed it. The theory is actually, to me, appears pathetically silly. And not founded. I mean, the idea that, look, we've had, as I mentioned, any number of extinctions. The Cambrian extinction was probably the most important in making this point, and that is where the species vanish, and then within a relatively short period of time of geological history, the species reappear. They didn't take, forever and ever and ever to from one cell to, two cells to three cells and natural selection. No. When the Earth repopulated after these extinctions, the species just came back pretty much whole overnight. And, of course, the Darwinians don't want to take this into consideration. And, I explore these ideas very deeply because what the ACLU wants to do and wants people to think is that if you're a believer in science, which is atheistic, then you're really smart and you're really sophisticated. If you believe in God and have any religious view of life or creation, then you're about, one step smarter than a turnip. And they ridicule this kind of intelligence because the agenda is to put man, not God, at the center of the universe. Put man and human reason on the throne of God. And a lot of my work is dedicated to making the point that as smart as we may think we are, there's limits to human intelligence. And part of the limits are, the need to acknowledge God and a recognition that our management skills are just not all that great when you come right down to it.
Right. Yes. Very, very good point. Very good point. Well, it's in the news recently, and with Sheriff Joe, I live in the greater Phoenix metro area, and he recently sent a little posse out to Hawaii to examine Obama's birth certificate. And from what I understand, he didn't get very far. But you wrote extensively on this. Maybe just update us on the issue. And I got to say, just before we start this, I cannot tolerate how people that ask a question about this are so marginalized in the mainstream media, or as Sarah Palin called it, the lamestream media, which I think is pretty appropriate, because it's a valid question.
Well, I mean, first of all, look, I wrote a book, another e-book, on Saul Alinsky, the evil genius behind Obama. And the left does demonize anything they can't otherwise defeat. Now, Sheriff Arpaio's posse made a great deal of progress. You're wrong on that. I accompanied them to Hawaii. They haven't yet reported on it. There will be another press conference.
I can hardly wait.
This is an issue that is growing in intensity. The number of people in the United States, likely voters who believe that Obama was not born in Hawaii like he claims, is large and growing. I'd say well over a majority if you honestly surveyed them. Obama even had his publicist for 16 years put out for his books a biography that said he was born in Kenya. Obama himself is the culprit for the born in Kenya idea, and there's ample evidence. The Hawaii won't release any of the original documents. The hospital, Kapi'olani, where he's supposed to be born, won't release the patient records of the mother. Maybe they don't even have them. There's lots of holes in this, and it's legitimate to ask the questions because Article 2, Section 1, demands that the president be a natural-born citizen, and the Democrats asked these questions extensively about McCain and even rolled them out again with the Washington Post asking them and the New York Times about George Romney. So, you got to recognize that when people are criticized as birthers and demonized, it's because the left uses the Saul Alinsky techniques. It's all they know how to do in answering a question they don't like. And second, the left is intrinsically hypocritical. And they will turn around and use as an attack the question that they just demonized, that they couldn't answer, applied to one of their own.
Yeah. No, I couldn't agree more. I mean, every time you get in a debate with someone on the left, it seems like it always devolves into basically, I hate George Bush.
Yeah, well, when I wrote The Abomination in 2008, I made some specific predictions in the book. I predicted that the economics would never be worse than they are under Obama, that we would enter into a global depression. I predicted that we would end up a more divided country, not a less divided country.
We're definitely more divided. There's no question about that.
I indicated that we would abandon Israel or marginalize Israel in a Middle East that would become extremely more radical and extremely more dominated by extremists among the Muslim religion, which has happened. The Arab Spring, a nice public relations effort, has turned into the control of Northern Africa, and now even Egypt and other states, by radical Muslim Brotherhood, which is determined to return to Jerusalem as its capital. I predicted that Obama would try to reduce, if not altogether eliminate, nuclear weapons unilaterally in the United States. I suggested that he would attempt to redistribute income, and that he would eliminate any enforcement of immigration rules to try to open the borders. And he's done all the things I predicted. Now, I'd say for those who still hate George W. Bush, if they want to do some measures of who did, what the accomplishments were under each administration, I think one of the reasons you're going to find Obama still attacking George W. Bush is even despite 4 years of his presidency, he cannot run on his own record. And this is, again, what I'm predicting the left. It's symptomatic of the left. If you allow these globalists, socialists, both Western Europe and the United States, since the end of World War II, have moved into social welfare, social democracies of a leftist nature. And the only inevitable result of these economies will be that they will bankrupt themselves, because you cannot pay for all the social welfare benefits that the far left can think to spend. And then, by the way, come back door into another part of our conversation, the environmental agenda and all the rest will be implemented once you get universal health care, because then health care will be rationed so that those who are considered useless eaters or whom they consider to be less advantageous politically will be denied the medical benefits needed, and it will hit the aged first.
And there we have the death panels, don't we?
Sure. Inevitable. Under it, the left will have death panels. They'll deny it all the way, and they'll demonize anyone who points it out. The same with open borders. As I said earlier, I'm for aggressive immigration, but controlled and legal immigration. The problem is, if you just willy-nilly open your borders, no human being is illegal. In other words, we're all citizens of the world, so get there and you belong there. We have that kind of thinking in our mentality. Then the United States will have an influx of people to the point where, again, the tax burden will be enormous, just in earned income tax credits, education of children in Hispanic, in schools that are already struggling, competition for jobs at lower pay scales, and competition for scarce positions in universities with positions given to students who can't afford to pay. I mean, these are the kinds of consequences of unlimited and the opening of the border to criminals and other elements that otherwise you could have kept out. We should have take the same number of people who are coming here illegally and bring them here legally. You'll have a fundamentally different phenomenon. One of growth, one of reasonable expectations, one of people wanting to become citizens. But the left wants to utilize a free trade agenda to create a global economy in which there are no borders, there are no governments, except for them who are managing the super government and the super regional. The bureaucrats in Luxembourg and Brussels are where the left always aims to impose their fascism. And anyone who's lived under bureaucratically determined government understands that it is the worst possible form of government.
Yeah, even in Scandinavian countries, they know that the big government, the socialist, it's just not as good as it sounds. You know, it just doesn't work. It has to collapse. It always does.
Bureaucrats
every single
impose
time.
Their own petty set of ideas, typically with no experience and a lot of book-learned ideology that they don't themselves often realize was Marxist-based.
Well, it's even worse than that. It's that they do it out of their self-interest. I mean, look at the state of California, where you've got the public employee unions, and, you know, you've got it to a lesser extent in the federal government, but they're just running roughshod over the taxpayers. I mean, it's unbelievable what they're doing.
And they're going to go bankrupt left and right.
Oh, they're already bankrupt. I mean, haven't formally filed.
And same with the European Union. They can print all the money they want. They can do everything they'd like to do, but eventually the drachma comes back and the lira comes back, and the because you can't manage these low regional economies. When you go back to Jean Monnet, and I've argued this when I wrote The Late Great USA, the attempt to create a North American Union, which again, you know, I criticized George W. Bush for doing, who was a globalist. He had globalists of the left and globalists of the right. These internationalists want to eliminate borders, eliminate families, all of these things that they consider limited and artificial. Remember, I've argued that God believers, anyone who dares think that families are precious or that people need nations or that all these antiquated ideas, which, of course, they're so intelligent and superior, they're beyond, and we're stupid.
Right. Of course they are. They're elitist intellectual snobs. I mean, it's John
and
Lennon's
it never
song, Imagine.
Works.
You know,
it never works.
It never works. It's been tried everywhere throughout history and everywhere geographically, and it's never worked in any place.
And they end up killing everybody who doesn't agree with them because ultimately they can't stand to be criticized. I mean, it's unfortunate, but this is the kind of thing where... So now Obama has essentially tried... He said, I was going to pander to the Hispanic vote. He basically put the DREAM Act into effect by fiat. At least provisions of it. And now he's saying, despite the Supreme Court ruling on 1070, he's not going to deport anyone who's even picked up and found to be illegal by a state or local law. So he's not going to enforce the immigration law.
And he's not going to allow Arizona to do it either.
No. So now, suddenly, we've completely abandoned the fundamental principles on which the country was founded. Our founding fathers, the states were sovereign. First, we the people are sovereign. Then the states are sovereign. Federal government was created for limited purposes. We just got the Supreme Court reading logic that was used to take the Commerce Clause and expand it to anything you conceivably do into saying, well, the control of immigration laws is federal, so the states must bow to the federal government. That's completely antithetical to the principles on which this country was founded.
Of course it is. Yeah, of course it is. I mean, let's hope tomorrow that the Supreme Court does the right thing, especially on the individual mandate. I mean, can you imagine? We have gone so far to the leftist craziness side here that the government actually wants to dictate how we spend our after-tax dollars. That's never been done before. That's completely groundbreaking.
It's only because the leftists haven't reached the point where you don't own your dollars. You don't own your property. It's a public good, and that's what redistribution of income means, that the public good has the ability to determine what happens to your money and your property. Of course, don't expect Barack Obama to move people into the White House to live with him or to devote entirely his earnings to have it taken away and redistributed to the poor. Always the socialists want to redistribute your income and own your property.
Scary stuff. Yeah.
It is, and unfortunately, fortunately, I think, we're going to come to a point where it just doesn't work anymore, and the social welfare states collapse into bankruptcy. The world will go through a massive global depression, but maybe at the end of it, people will realize the need to stop rejecting God, to go back to the fundamental principles of private enterprise, and the inalienable freedoms our founding fathers sought to preserve and protect. Inalienable meaning God-given. So these, I think, are the points that we're going to have to now see played out as the less grand dream, once again, of European Union, North American Union, free trade moving into regional governments, social welfare states, all these things collapse in bankruptcy.
They ultimately do, they ultimately have to, or they collapse into massive
right.
inflation, which is just another form of bankruptcy.
And largely the left hates my work and does everything they can to keep me off of the media because I speak frankly about this stuff and I write it out and I write it clearly. And, you know, my writing is always extremely well documented and well, and unfortunately my predictions end up being true. And have for years as I've been writing about all of these issues. And the left hates it. But again, that's again the attempt to demonize my work or to marginalize me, I point out, is again symptomatic of what I wrote about in this ebook, Saul Alinsky, The Evil Genius Behind Obama. It's intrinsic to the left to demonize anyone they don't agree with.
It's the Saul Alinsky playbook, and Obama's group follows it to a T, you know, the Chicago thuggery. So just in closing here, tell us what you think about Mitt Romney. I mean, the media and the powers that be and the corporatocracy and government will never let us have Ron Paul or any third party, it seems. What are your thoughts on Romney?
Well, I'm sure I'll be opposing Romney the same way I opposed George W. Bush on a whole variety of issues. But Romney is not a socialist. He's not a communist. He does have some fundamental understanding of America, and it's going to be easier to argue with him, and it's going to be possible, hopefully, to get the country to wake up before it self-destructs. If Obama's reelected, my hopes for the country diminish dramatically. My expectations will be that we will suffer major cataclysmic economic depression, war, etc. And I don't have those same anticipations with Romney.
I would agree with you. You know, Obama in a second term without the chance of having a third would be a very, very dangerous.
Yeah, you might as well rip up the Constitution and you might as well just make him dictator for life.
Yeah, it's about the way it is. Well, give out your website if you would and tell people where you write.
Yeah, I am.
World Net Daily too. Yeah.
A number of websites. I mean, I write on WND.com. I'm senior staff reporter on WND.com. I'm increasingly doing a lot of work on 1776nation.com, 1776nation.com. And I've set up a company called Constitution Consultants, constitutionconsultants.com, to help fund the work that we're doing with Sheriff Arpaio. So those are three websites you can take a look at.
Good stuff. Well, Dr. Jeremy Corsi, thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate finally getting you on the show and talking to you. Keep up the good work.
Thanks, Jason. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for joining us today for the Holistic Survival Show, protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in uncertain times. Be sure to listen to our Creating Wealth Show, which focuses on exploiting the financial and wealth creation opportunities in today's economy. Learn more at www.jasonhartman.com or search Jason Hartman on iTunes. This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company, offering very general guidelines and information. Opinions of guests are their own, and none of the content should be considered individual advice. If you require personalized advice, please consult an appropriate professional. Information deemed reliable, but not guaranteed.